Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast, we will discuss Dustin Johnson's dominant win at Kapalua and look ahead to this week's Sony Open. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I'm joined by Joel Beal. We got off to a great start to 2018 on the PGA Tour with Dustin Johnson winning by 8 shots in Kapalua. And not only that, according to Brandel Chambly, hitting the greatest shot ever in golf history. Joel, what'd you make of it? I mean, let's be honest, it was spectacular, but
it was great.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and say there was a little hyperbole.
Yeah, just a little from Brandel. Yeah.
What would be your greatest shot?
Greatest shot ever?
Not yours, but your nomination for the
nomination,
greatest shot.
Nomination, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't really have that many great shots. I mean, you know, Brandel wasn't talking about chips, so we're not going to do the Tiger at Augusta. I'm thinking here. It's tough. I'd probably have to go with something Tiger. You know
well,
that.
Yeah, get out of here.
I mean, obviously, Phil's through the trees comes up, you know, at Augusta. You know, Jack Nicklaus's one iron at Pebble in 72. I wasn't there for that or wasn't watching live, but I've seen the highlights. Jack in 86 almost making the ace on 16 in his amazing comeback. You know, Tiger has so many, although I guess a lot of them really are putts but or chips. Not as much full shots, I guess, but
I mean, the shot of the bunker at the Canadian Open was
of
ridiculous
course.
Although
yeah, that not is, a major though
exactly yeah. And it gets overplayed just a little bit. I mean, the ball didn't even necessarily land on the green. I mean, landed on the green but didn't finish on the green. It was still off the I mean, it was an amazing shot, but
I feel like now if you know Jordan or Dustin were put in that same situation of a tournament, they would pull off a similar shot. I feel like at the time, for some reason, it was just incredible. But now that's a 200-yard bunker shot, even over water. I mean, and again, who knows if he really meant to take that aggressive of a line. But I feel like we just see, you know, Rory McIlroy, we would kind of expect a guy today. Think about Rory's shot into 18 at the Honda with the 5-wood or the 3, you know, he stuck at the 8 feet. I mean, we see these guys pull off, Justin Thomas last year at the U.S. Open on 18. We see these incredible shots now from and now Dustin Johnson from 430 yards out. I mean, obviously part of this is technology, but part of it is there's just so many great players now. But I mean, that obviously was a great shot.
Especially you have mentioned the developments in technology. I think this summer, that 18th hole had a Roy Abbey, guys were hitting like a pitching wedge into a par five where, you know, Woods' shot was from what, like 210 or something, I think.
I think he did it. It's a 6-iron though, right?
Correct. But now these guys are hitting 8-iron for that.
But no, I mean, of course, Brandel is going to be Brandel. He's going to stir the pot. He's great. His point is that technically hitting a shot 430 yards to within 4 inches is, you know, on one logically I could see what he's talking about, but again, it's the Century Tournament. Hey, I remember the
sponsor this time.
The Century Tournament of Champions. It's January on the PGA Tour, and Dustin Johnson already had a 6-shot lead, so there really wasn't much, you know, pressure. Maybe even if it was on the 18th hole,
wasn't a lot riding on it. Put it that way.
No, there wasn't. I mean, even, you know, is it even better than when Tiger hit? It's similar because he had a huge lead. The shot in the dark at Firestone.
I think that's Dustin Johnson's best shot. Well, like you mentioned earlier, at Oakmont, after all the stuff he went through.
Oh.
Right before on 18 where the guy clicked in his back wrist and he puts it within 3 feet. I mean, talk about just stones.
Exactly. I would give you 4 Dustin Johnson shots off the top of my head that are better. The first tee shot after he found out he was penalized. I mean, 360-yard drive.
Unfazed.
With like OB on the left. I mean, just perfect. The tee shot on 18, the approach shot on 18 to 4 feet.
Which, by the way, to that point, no one got within maybe 8 or 9 feet all day.
That was, and he just put it away. And actually, no, I'll give you 2 more. The 2 shots he hit on 18 at Chambers Bay were as perfect of golf shots as you could hit. The drive was just as good as what he did. It wasn't, it just wasn't downhill into a funnel. And then he hit a long iron to ten feet, 15 feet, 12 feet. And of course he three putted, but we've seen him hit some spectacular shots, you know, just this summer, or I guess it was still the summer, maybe even the fall, the tee shot he hit in the playoff at the Northern Trust against Jordan Spieth, that was the greatest drive we'd ever seen. So we know what he's capable of. He is one of these, one of the most, you know, special talents in terms of pulling off these incredible instant classic shots, you know, Tiger Woods-esque in that regard. But again, when we're arguing if this was even his best shot ever, that it kind of makes Brandel's argument look a little silly. No offense, Brandel. But anyway, it was amazing. He won by 8 shots. He's off to the races again. Of course, he was a monstrous favorite going into the Masters last year before he slipped on the stairs. And now he's almost back to favorite status again. Should he be the favorite? Or is it too early, or does it really even matter?
The only reason I would say not the favorite in terms, or we're talking Masters here, right?
Masters, yeah.
The only reason not is he's had a good tracker record there. Yeah. Just even though he had a lot of gains in putting last year and he putted very well at Kapalua, that's the one area that still just worries me at Augusta a little bit, and it's just hard to argue against Spieth's track record there the past 4 years. I think Dustin Johnson's in that 2 or 3 category, but I still think Spieth would be at least personally my favorite going in.
I guess I agree. I don't know. I guess I'd say co-favorites with Spieth, but it is funny how Justin Thomas established himself as the player of the year last year, after Dustin did, obviously. And then Jordan, by the end of the year, had kind of taken it back, and he was back up to number two. But after this past week, Dustin Johnson is clearly world number one again, I think.
I mean, when he's healthy, I think we tend to pigeonhole him just in the driver's. He's a really good wedge player, too. He's probably one of the top 8 or 9 wedge players in the game right now.
And he used to be terrible.
Oh, I mean, it was really bad. And so, you know, the putting, it kind of comes and goes. But even if he's just average, man, it's hard for the rest of the field to compete. And you hate to say it because there's so many ebbs and flows in this game that a guy can look so – I mean, Rory, a couple years ago, looked like he was –
Jason Day won last year a tournament.
Hideki Matsuyama at various points last year. So
no, it goes back and forth. But now we're now on almost 2 years straight of, other than when Dustin got hurt and sat out a little and then had to come back and work his way back. Other than that,
I mean, it's his fifth win since February, right? So clearly things are going well for him.
Right.
And man, you're right. It's a very distant right now between him and Spieth and Thomas, and you know, if you want to throw Rahm in there as well, it's clearly Dustin's world at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Rahm, up to number 3 in the world, 4th youngest to do it.
Tiger, Rory, and Spieth.
Right, it's impressive company there. But Dustin, I mean, it's what he's done the last couple of years. You mentioned the wedge game. That's the most important thing, obviously. Well, the driving is most important because it's setting up the wedge game. But there was a stat. He averaged 92 yards for his approach shots all week. So, that's absurd.
And it's not a small ballpark by any means either.
Right. But B, you have to have your wedge game honed in. But even if you don't have your wedge game honed in, if you're averaging 92 yards in approach, if I'm averaging 92 yards in approach, I'm expecting to have a birdie putt every time. You know, even a reasonable one. So if Dustin's even somewhat on with the wedge game after hitting tee shots like that, I mean, look out, obviously. But it's incredible what he does. But what's amazing, too, is that tee shot, the near ace, came a day after he almost hit the pin again on the same hole. He basically hit the same exact drive 2 days in a row from 430 yards. So, yep, he's amazing.
Basically, 200 yards farther than your average tee ball?
You're being kind. Yeah, no, I'd say that's about right. Yeah.
In the middle, though.
If I pop it, I can get it 250, 260 every once in a while. Not, you know, 100 yards behind you. But
I'm usually behind the trees, though. A
couple other things to talk about from Kapalua. A couple fashion things.
Oh,
got
boy.
Ricky Fowler's Hawaiian shirt, untucked. Although a Hawaiian shirt, you kind of have to.
You have to, right? You can't talk in a Hawaiian shirt.
And I know you were especially into, and I agree, Jason Duffner's hats.
Why wasn't this a bigger deal?
Don't know.
Notorious B.I.G. At first, when I saw it on Twitter, I thought it was Photoshopped.
Yeah.
And then got to live, and I was like, he really is wearing it. And, you know, early in the week, he had wore like a you know, like a USA yep. type hat, and then in the pro-am wore a Toronto Blue Jays yep. hat, which someone else, I forget who, I'm pulling a blank, I think it was a Euro guy, was wearing a New York Yankees hat as well. I mean, this could change the game as we know it. If he starts wearing Biggie hats on tour to a regular basis, doesn't have a deal at the moment, so he has the freedom to do so.
It's great.
The possibilities yeah. are endless here with Duffner. He's playing this week as well, so hopefully he embraces it. I'm not ruling him like actually wearing a hula skirt out at this point, which might be the best moment on the PGA Tour of all time if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, the Biggie hat was spectacular. Especially because it just seemed so unexpected from Duffner.
But it also felt right.
It did. Yeah. He, you know, Duff Daddy, he's got this cool personality. You know, you kind of would expect him to be a Biggie fan. I'd love to see someone try to coax a few bars of Mo Money, Mo Problems out of him at the next press conference. We'll see if he'll do that. But that was a nice surprise. The Hawaiian shirt wasn't necessarily a surprise, I guess.
Yeah, Puma had sent the release out.
And it's a good-looking shirt, I got to be honest. $75, a little steep for a Hawaiian shirt. But are we going to see this at our respective courses this year? That's the only thing I worry about.
I don't think it would be allowed on our course. Even a public course, I don't know if it would allow you with a Hawaiian shirt.
It depends. It would have to be a pretty loose dress code. But again, Ricky looked great. I mean, but he's Ricky.
It was the first Hawaiian shirt that didn't have like a beer stain on it, or it was actually buttoned up and one of the buttons wasn't missing and it was aligned right. I think he should really embrace the whole Hawaiian shirt persona.
He should. Hey, it fits him well. It really does.
And he played well in it too.
Played well. Yeah.
Really, I think he shot 4 under that first round.
Yeah, that might have been his best round.
Yeah. Maybe he could be onto something.
It could be. Well, he, you know, some of these guys are sticking around in Hawaii this week. One of those guys, of course, is Justin Thomas, the defending champ at the Sony Open. And last year, he broke the PGA Tour record for lowest aggregate 72-hole score with a 253, which is ridiculous. Of course, it helps when you shoot a 59 in the first round. It is a par 70 at Wailea Country Club. Not the longest course on tour. In fact, one of the shorter ones. And when there's no wind like there was last year, and this week's forecast calls for not a lot of wind either, these guys are going to kind of take it apart.
I mean, it kind of gets lost a little bit, especially now we're a year out. But Thomas was the only guy who went low last year. Kevin Kisner and I think Chaz Reavie made 59 charges as well that week. So, you know, not that dismisses Thomas did by any means.
He won by 7 shots.
Exactly. So, but it is one of the easier courses on tour. I think the last 3 years, the average winning score has been around 23 or 24 under. So these guys definitely take advantage of the terrain. It's not a long, like you mentioned, it's not long, but it does require a little bit of accuracy on the second shots, which is why Jimmy Walker's won here twice. Zach Johnson has played historically well here as well. Kisner's another guy. So you don't necessarily have to be long, but you really have to get it done with the second shots here.
Yeah. You mentioned Jimmy Walker. I was going to mention him at some point. Obviously, he's a 2-time champ here. One of those years, I think he won by 8 shots, a runaway win. He, you know, really struggled last year. Obviously, he announced in the summer that he had been diagnosed with Lyme disease. For a few months, he didn't know what he had. And it took him a while, according to his wife, Erin, who wrote the post and who sadly, in a really unfortunate coincidence, has also contracted Lyme disease. She documented kind of his struggles with dealing with it, but also finding a treatment. And at one point last year, he was taking some kind of medicine during the Players, actually, where being out in the sun gave him second-degree burns. Mm. So he had to shut down golf altogether. Supposedly, he is onto something. They think now that he's feeling a lot better. He said he's feeling about 80-90%. I saw Tim Rosefort report that. But as Erin mentioned, he still says he has something called Lyme fog, where his mentally he's just not there. And he actually said that showed up in his chipping. He thought he had the yips at one point. So just wanted to mention him because I'm not picking him. I doubt you are either. Normally we would. He's one of the best horses for courses guys. Jimmy Walker at the Sony Open. But I think we need to see him play a little better. We obviously wish him the best this year. And I think he is going to have a better year this year. It seems like he's on the track back. But
I'll say, it's such a weird kind of – he obviously had that emergence out of nowhere starting
at the age of, 35,
33, 34.
Yeah, he's
And then kind of went away for a little bit. Then it came out, it was what, 125-1 favorite at Baltusrol a couple years ago. Won there. Everyone's like, okay, Walker's back. Yep. And then gets this. And then basically his entire next year's wiped out. Yep. So I think, you know, he still, you know, still has a couple of years left in him. Yep. And hopefully now that this is almost behind him, he can get back on track.
Yep, yep. All right. Let's move on then to who we are picking. And Joel, I'll let you go first.
First guy for me is Mark Leishman, who... kind of an interesting little tidbit here. Since the 20 years that the Tournament of Champions has been the week before the Sony Open, only six times has a guy won who didn't play the week before. Mm. So if you're looking for guys, look at the guys who were in the field last week at Kapalua. And so Leishman's a guy who was leading after 36 holes, fell apart there on Saturday, but you know, still had a pretty good week. Has played well here. Has played eight times. Has a couple of top 10 finishes and has finished in the top 25 five times. You mentioned the wind shouldn't be a problem, but Leishman, if it does pop up, Leishman's one of the better wind players in the game. I think he's a very safe bet for a top 10 finish this week.
I agree. That's five top sevens in his past seven worldwide starts for Leishman. I had him on my list, but I had an extra guy, so I'll bump him off. I'll take someone else. But you're right with that stat on guys playing at Kapalua, coming over, doing better at the Sony. Another interesting stat, and this comes from PGA Tour's Rob Bolton, and this really jumped out at me. A first-timer at the Sony has only won once since 1965 when the tournament began. So, I mean, this is basically like the Masters. We always talk about the Masters where Fuzzy Zeller is the only real rookie, not counting the first few you know, years to win, but it's very unusual.
You know, Wylie, Augusta National.
Wylie, Augusta National. You know, they're right in the same breath. That being said, a guy who has done well at the Masters, a guy who did well last week, is Jordan Spieth. And I know
going on a limb.
Really going on a limb. We both did it last week. He really got off to a tough start with a 75. After that, he played great, finished ninth place, which, you know, if you want to pad the stats on the top 10,
that's
you
kind
of
right?
have to finish in the top 10 at the Tournament of Champions when there's only about 30 guys in there. So he was able to pull that out, get that top 10 to, you know, pad his stats that way. But I think he's going to carry it over this week. Finished third here last year, behind, obviously, his good friend, Justin Thomas, as we all know. So I like Jordan Spieth to kind of get going again here. And, you know, an obvious pick, but I think a pretty smart one.
I think exactly, a safe one. And as you mentioned, it's funny. He last year we were asking at some point, what's wrong with Jordan Spieth?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he went 3-3 to start out last year. It was just the way Justin Thomas started. It got overshadowed, and then he ends up winning Pebble Beach and plays well at Augusta, and obviously had a great year. It's just funny how sometimes things are framed, and that's maybe sometimes our fault as well.
Yeah, so. I agree. Who's your second guy?
Well, mentioned him earlier, and that's Kevin Kisner. He you know, played really, really well last year. Kind of struggled a bit in the fall. I think it was just a little burnout, but the break seems to do him good, and he's played really well here. He's had went fifth in 2016 and finished fourth here last season. Mentioned earlier, don't need to be the longest off the tee. It's really about the second shots. And, you know, outside of Spieth, Kisner is probably one of the better names out there. Definitely one of the better names in the field, just in general. Not the sexiest pick, but it's a very safe one. Kevin Kisner.
You read my mind again, and he's on my list as well. I'm also taking Kevin Kisner. The only thing I'm worried about is, how will he respond to that heartbreaking loss by his Georgia Bulldogs?
Rough.
That was brutal.
What was the bet again he had with Justin Thomas?
I think they have to wear the jersey of the other. So that might happen this week.
Oof.
So that could set him back too. I still like him. I still like him this week. Maybe it'll be a, you know, redemption story.
This is true.
He'll bounce back. He'll show that grit. That wasn't a brutal loss, by the way. That really, really was. And congrats to Justin Thomas. Who else? Drew Love, Tom Lovelady, all these Alabama guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Georgia guys, a lot of Alabama guys. That was a very entertaining second half, I'll say. The first half was pretty bad. But
Bubba Watson made an appearance
on
Game
Day. That's right,
Day.
Hanging out with Todd Gurley. He was all over the place. Yeah, so those Georgia guys woke up on Tuesday, probably not feeling too good. But, you know, another guy, I'll take my next pick then. Speaking of which, I'm going with another Bulldog. I didn't even think about it.
I know where you're going with this. But
Brian Harman. And, you know, you can't finish in the top 10 in every event for an entire season if you don't finish in the top 10 of the first four events, which is what Brian Harman has done, coming off a third place this past week at Kapalua to keep it going. He is just off to a red hot start. Obviously, we saw what he could do last year when he won the Wells Fargo to hold. He held off Dustin Johnson. That was his second win. Really kind of had a breakout year last year. And, you know, he's not slowing down, that's for sure. As we mentioned, you know, he's not the longest hitter. And this course certainly doesn't hurt him in that regard, being barely over 7,000 yards. And, you know, it's incredible. The four top tens already, I looked this up, but Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, not surprisingly, led the tour in top tens last year with 12 each. So he's already a third of the way there, and we just started the year. Another one this week would get him over almost halfway there. So he's off to a great start. And just because he hasn't won, I think a little more, he hasn't gotten the credit he deserves.
We've talked about the Ryder Cup already a few times the past couple weeks. Guys like, you know, will Patrick Cantlay be able to contend for a spot? Brian Harman's a guy who was right there for the President's Cup. And, always hear about this bulldog of mentality of his, which, by the way, is getting right up there with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. They're good buddies. Yep. Brian Harman, a bulldog's thrown in there within the first sentence or
a literal bulldog, too.
I know. But that being said, if he keeps playing like this with that mentality, I think you can actually see the way he grinds. It kind of almost bugs guys a little bit because, you know, especially when it gets to the later rounds, he's a good 40, 50 yards behind these guys off the tee. And the fact that he's beating them, he kind of gets under their skin a little bit, I think, which would be really good for the team format. It'll be interesting to see how this year plays out. But I think Brian Harman's a very sneaky pick to be a dark horse candidate on the Ryder Cup this year.
He is. And we talked about this, and we're going to keep talking about it. There's so many guys, though. And the problem is, and like you mentioned Jimmy Walker a couple minutes ago, Jimmy Walker wasn't even close to making the Ryder Cup.
Same with Zach Johnson.
And if you win a major, boom, you're right in there. Or even if you win a couple tournaments versus like a guy like Harman who has been so steady with all these top tens, if you don't get a win or so in there, you could get jumped.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it gets tough. And speaking of getting under the skin, apparently, Bulldog or the diminutive Harman is what he's kind of been known. Apparently he doesn't like that. Called that at all.
That was a few times at Aaron Hills. People asked him about his stat. Like, you know, how do you feel like going against Koepka and, you know, DJ Stone-faced?
Yeah.
He's not embracing that little man mentality whatsoever.
He does not like that at all. But, no, I really like him this week. And, obviously, we've already talked about him a lot this year so far. Who do you like next, Joel?
I'm going with another SEC guy, and that's Jason Duffner. You mentioned him earlier in the podcast, but he played better last week than he finished T11, but really throughout until Sunday was right there in the mix. We mentioned earlier you have to be a good iron player here, and Duffner certainly that. He was 16th last year in strokes gained approach. Doesn't have the greatest of track records here, although he did post a top 10 2 years ago. But really kind of gives me hope that he's going to play well this week, as he put it well last week. Mm. At Kapalua, and that's, you know, if you know anything about Duffner, that's the one thing he can really never get going. He's not that great of a putter. You don't have to be the greens here at Wailea are not necessarily tough, but you know it always helps to be get it going with the flat stick. And I think Duffner, if he does what he did last week, I think he's a good bet for, you know, top 15.
And again, please wear the biggie hat again, and please win with the biggie hat. That'd be amazing. I mean, he'd have to do a little something, a little rap, something.
You would at least have to break the Cavassier out, I feel like, on the 18th
green.
Yeah,
something. Oh, man, that'd be great. We'll look forward to that. My fourth and final guy is Webb Simpson. And, you know, his track record here is so funny. It's so vintage Webb Simpson. He has three consecutive T13s. So, you know, again, former, you know, U.S. Open champ. Obviously, he's won a few times on tour, almost won the FedEx Cup 1 year. But, you know, just kind of established his reputation now, especially since he's figured out how to putt without the long putter or with the anchoring putter, to just consistently make, you know, have a solid finish, top 15s, top 20s. And, again, those three straight top 13s, I expect him to do at least that this week. Also, funny, his caddy, Paul Tesori, tweeted out this great photo. Apparently they're rooming together this week. And of course, Webb has the big bed. Paul Tesori has a little cot on the side.
Come on now.
Just a reminder, Webb Simpson made $3.2 million last year on course. So Paul Tesori did pretty well for himself, too, and yet they're splitting room. Although Hawaii hotel rooms are pretty pricey.
It's the camaraderie builder. Look at it that way.
They are good friends. I respect it. I love that they're being frugal. Obviously, their families aren't with them, I guess, this week. So they're just, you know, hey, let's play it
just
cheap.
Boys being boys.
Boys being boys. Save some cash. Hopefully neither of them snores too loudly. And, again, hopefully Webb picks up another big finish. I think he's, you know, obviously one of the safer picks out there.
That being said, if you're Webb, you got to give the caddy the bigger bet. I mean, he's lunging around bag all day.
Yeah.
And, come on.
Well, maybe at Kapalua, a plantation course. I mean, that is
a beast
of a walk.
It is not great.
Which, again, Justin Thomas's dad, his poor dad, found out the hard way when he had to sub in. And
there's
we
a
haven't
reason,
mentioned that yet.
There's a reason Bones is hopping on this week and didn't hop on the last two
that's
rounds.
That's right. That's right. And that's a great subplot this week. Although, are you picking Justin Thomas? Neither of us picked him. It's just kind of too
obvious.
Just,
let's just assume that you should have Justin Thomas in your lineup if he's available. How about that?
And especially, it's Justin Thomas paired with Jim Bones Mackay this week. Obviously, Phil Mickelson's longtime caddy. He's coming out of retirement, I think, just for this week.
Just this week. Although, if he wins, what happens?
Exactly.
Like, does he give him the call?
Does he get a little taste of, does he want to win another major? Now, of course, we're not Justin Jimmy Johnson, Justin's normal caddy, has done a great job.
Mm-hmm.
He's been Justin's caddy since the summer of 2015. Obviously, they won Player of the Year last year together. He won the first major. So I don't think Justin, you know, would think of anything like that. And I think Bones has really enjoyed his transition to
TV. I think
TV.
We've enjoyed it. He's,
well, sure.
I mean, if anything, the only thing I'm upset about with NBC is that he's not featured more. He's very – you see this sometimes in all sports when – like Tony Romo, it's actually good to get these guys when they're still fresh. I think when announcers start going south is when they've been out of the game for 10 years and they kind of lose touch what's going on.
Yeah,
Bones is bringing a perspective of that, you know, very few guys have, not only because of Phil, but just because, you know, how many caddies have transitioned to this role before? That would be a loss if he actually would go back full time because I think he's one of the more fresh and enlightening voices we've had in quite some time in golf.
But it's a unique opportunity, and I don't know what the rules are in this. I know a few years ago they were trying to mic up a guy every round, but you know, it is the Sony Open in January. You could spice it up a little. You could
It'll
have Bones keep the mic. The yeah. Have him announce from,
don't know what Justin Thomas was thinking on that shot right there.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be fascinating. And you know, obviously we all used to just get the biggest kick out of listening to Bones and Phil talk. It'd be great to hear every word that he says during a round, if that's allowed. And I'm sure Justin would be okay with that. And not only them talking together, but, you know, having him comment on other stuff that's happening in the group. I don't think that's ever happened before. That'd be,
I mean, you would
cool.
have it during those, Monday night showdowns, like the TV, but those are all phony conversations.
This would be
and
real deal. And again, a guy who we know is great at doing that. Also, he's great at doing both jobs. Speaking of which, it's funny, Phil Mickelson never played in the Sony Open. Even when he came out to Kapalua, he did not play in the Sony Open ever. So Bones last caddied for Scott Simpson at the 1992 Sony Open, which is the year before Justin Thomas was born. So really interesting stat there. So it's not like he's going to be bringing him a ton of local knowledge here. But again, it could be very entertaining, especially if he kind of Let's see if
also,
the NBC Golf Channel execs listen to us. Leave the mic on, Bones, this week.
And let's be honest, you can do no wrong to a guy who shot 59 this course last
year.
He's
exactly.
going to be okay.
He's going to be fun. Yeah. You have one final pick?
Be Kevin Na. A bit of a wild card, but, you know, not played well last year. He finished eighth in strokes gained approach. He's played pretty good here at Wailea. Has two top tens to his name. Three top tens in 12 tries. Not off to the best of starts this year, but also hasn't really played that much either. So if you're looking for a kind of a cheap option or just, you know, off the grid a little bit, I think Kevin Na's a pretty sound bet.
All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Those are our picks. Thanks again for listening. Good luck this week. Please enjoy the golf. We'll see if there are any more Hawaiian shirts, any more great hats from Jason Duffner, and if Bones keeps the mic on. We'll see. So a lot to watch out for. Thanks again for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. And check back next week.